everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Indie Film Cafe. I am the Moo Cow, also known as Paulie Presenza, and I am here with...
Jonathan Moody, your co-host.
Julianne Prescott.
And Rebecca Reinhart.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Indie Film Cafe, and today we are going to be talking about the weird and crazy 1990 film... RoboChick, a.k.a. CyberChick, which is a really super goofy film that I saw years ago back in the VHS days. And, you know, I don't know that it's ever been released on DVD, but I thought it was just such a weird, goofy movie that it'd be kind of a fun stinker to do. So I just assume you guys had never seen this before. Am I right?
No, I had never even heard of it.
What about you, Jonathan?
Nope, never in my life.
All right, well.
What about Julianne? Have you seen it?
No, I hadn't heard of it either until you had asked me about it.
Well, it's a Kathy Schauer movie, and for those of you who don't know, Kathy Schauer in the late 80s and through the 90s was one of those "it's time to take off my clothes and act" kind of chick. She was in a whole bunch of movies. Most of them weren't particularly good, but they were generally, for the most part, better than this one. This one was just kind of a strange outlier. And so we decided to go with this one. So I guess what we'll do is we will go away for a little bit of mood music, and we will come right back and talk about this film. All right, so here we go, and we are back for RoboChick. All right, guys, so first reaction, what did you guys think of RoboChick?
I was really, it felt like something that I had watched maybe on Up All Night back in the day on USA late at night. It really did make me have that vibe of just the super campy, super crazy, this whole vibe that just was part of those kind of films of the era that you would see in kind of like the midnight, 1 a.m. slot. And it was really, I had fun with it. I thought it was kind of, it was cool to watch something different like that too and just laugh and see everybody's hair and what they were wearing and go, oh my God.
Well, it also had like a trauma feel, but like kind of like cheap trauma, if that's possible.
Right. Yeah. It didn't quite make it to the level of trauma.
Yeah. Though I do, I think, you know, this would have fit in with a double feature with, like, you know, the really, really bad robot, you know, movies of the 80s and 90s, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Especially since a lot of them were, like, RoboCop parodies or, like, ripoffs or whatever. And this was kind of a ripoff parody of it.
Yeah. Right, there was a Japanese one called Lady Battle Cop that came out afterwards, and I've got it. I haven't watched it in a long, long time, and I know that there's a number of discrepancies, but it's kind of along the same kind of lines, you know. That's just a gender swap version of RoboCop, except in this particular one, I don't know. I mean, first of all, she's not really a cop, you know. I mean, it's in the box cover, it says part cop, part woman, part robot or something like that, but I didn't really get the cop part, you know. I don't think she's ever a cop.
Yeah,
I feel like she was like a superhero.
I mean, any quote-unquote power she has, like legal power, is like really more given to her by the reporter, not by like the cops. She's trying to take down the cop.
Right. Yeah, no, she's not a member of the police at all. She's an invention by this wacky borscht belt computer nerd scientist guy.
Dr. Von Kolen.
Yes, he's like the best thing in the film. He's like, yo, I invented you. You are my gift to the world.
Yeah, every time he's talking to her, I'm always like, oh my God, because he's just staring at her like, it's almost like he needs to get a restraining order sometimes because he's like, oh my God.
I'm just cleaning my beaker.
This is my first thing with this is like, he's like, obviously, like, he's a genius. He'll tell you a million times in this movie, he's a genius.
Right.
As will other people. But, like, he's already, he's had the body sitting there for God knows how long.
Good God.
Sitting there. It's not as if she arrived on his doorstep. This is not a Weird Science thing. I mean, he knew exactly. He's probably already, like, banged that, like, body, headless body, like, a few times. But he seems so enamored, not by the fact that he created something that was, like, animate. It's that she's so hot. But he created her and to be hot. Well,
right, right. There's no reason to give a robot that's going to fight crime for you boobs. There's really no reason for that.
Well, I mean, you know, it might as well be aesthetically pleasing. And she does throw people for a loop.
Yes, she does.
Well, the first question I have to ask is, A, where did he get the heads? You know, or the head, you know, and B, the other
he
question.
He made them. He invented them. He created them.
Maybe.
Couldn't get a good wig for them.
No, he could not pick out a wig to save his life.
And the other question I have to ask is, like, did he have other heads? Because it seemed like he kind of picked it up choosing.
Yeah, because he said something about, okay, I think we're going to go with this model head. Like,
right, but I didn't see any other heads. And now I'm, like, wondering where the hell they were.
God, he's got a head collection.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's probably popping them on and off, you know? Like, okay, let's have Sally's head tonight, and we'll have Jennifer's.
Well, okay. No, probably more. I was going to say, he doesn't give them names. Probably like, I need a redhead tonight.
So let me go ahead and give you guys a little bit of background on the movie and some of the folks who were involved. So the robo part is obvious. The CHIC, it stands for Computerized Humanoid Intelligence Clone. So CHIC. Yeah. Although this movie is known by several other names, including Cyber Chick, Robo Chick seems to be the one that it was originally designed for. It was directed by two directors, largely because there was some kind of controversy going on, and I think that the movie really picks up on it. But Ed Hansen was the original director. He's a guy that did a whole bunch of sort of nudie, you know, tit movies, basically, for no other word. You know, he did movies like Taking It Off and Eroticize and Bikini Car Wash.
Bikini Car Wash Company. Yes.
There you go.
I love that one. I love
those
balls.
And it's funny because the guy, you know, I looked at some of his previous things before he did that. He was actually an editor, and he was an editor for the Rocky and Bullwinkle show in the 50s. Which is so cool.
Did I see too? He was an editor of 9 1/2 Weeks, which is a good budget movie.
Wow.
So he did this, but also it seems like he was either assisted or replaced by Jeff Mandel, who was also one of the co-writers. He is, of course, the guy who gave us the infamous movie in 1989, Elves, which if you guys haven't seen it, you need to see that. It's such a weird-ass movie.
I've been trying to find it. I can't find where to get it, though.
Oh, I've got a copy. I can send it. I can send you a digital copy.
Cool. We can do like all of us can circle back and do this again. Do Elves.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, he was also a writer on a show called Superforce on TV between 1990 and 1992. Now, the reason I bring all this up because, A, generally speaking, when you have a movie done by more than one director, it's usually because there's a problem. It's usually trouble. But apparently, Kathy Schauer herself was the executive producer and star in this, and a third of the way through, she was like, "This looks terrible. I'm leaving." So she left the production.
Okay. So this is a question that I had when I was watching it because I read that piece of trivia. I was trying to pinpoint when she was like replaced, but I mean, they do some like she has like close up. Like dialogue all through the movie.
Right. There's about 20 to 25 minutes of her in the film. The rest either doesn't have her in there or it's got the other person, Robo Chick 2, played by Jennifer Daly, who doesn't really look like her. I mean, I guess she kind of does, but when you put that stupid wig on, I mean, anybody. Yeah. Moody, you could have looked like her. I mean,
I would look like her. There you go.
But the thing is, they had it.
Yeah, I mean, what I don't understand though is, like, did she come in, do all of her close-ups, and then say, "Fuck it, and leave," and then, like, they just happen to have all of that stuff done? Because there seems to be an awful lot of screen time, like, very, like, clearly her, not a stunt double.
And that's why when I had talked to Moody about this movie previously, I'd said, God, I would give my eye teeth to have an interview with Kathy Schauer about this film. What the heck happened? I mean, she must have saw which way the wind was blowing with this, because the movie is so different, A, with the other person in there, and B, it just seems to lose a lot of the fun and wackiness, you know. It's a crappy movie, let's not forget that, but there's actually a lot of good chemistry between her and the doctor that really keeps the movie, you know, from completely being a piece of shit. It really does help, and the movie is sorely lacking that when Kathy Schauer's not around. And it's not like Kathy Schauer is a terrible actress. I mean, yeah, she's known for doing a lot of, you know, erotic films, but that doesn't necessarily mean she's a bad actress. I think she was okay, and really, I thought she did pretty good. I mean, she actually makes the character kind of cute at the beginning. She's just so innocent in the way she kind of parrots back everything that the doctor says. And it was just really, really cute. And I liked it. And I would love to have seen more of that. But I guess she just decided it just was not worth it. And she took off.
Yeah, someone who has starred in Commando Squad, you know, her.
Oh, yes.
She, I mean, like, I guess her standards were just a little too high.
Well, yeah, and so that's one of her movies. That's probably her biggest movie. That's the one that really was her breakthrough back in 1987.
Okay, had you guys seen Commando Squad? Or because I have heard of it, but I've never seen it.
No.
So. That's haven't. I think that's Fred Olen Ray, isn't it?
Maybe. Probably.
Yeah, I think it is.
Rebecca,
yeah, that's 1987.
I mean, I feel like I have, like, I mean, I know the cover, whatever, but I can't tell you anything about it. Like, if I popped it in, I'd probably be like, yeah, I've seen this.
Yeah, but I do not have boobs. That, but I would love to.
There are boobs. That's the synopsis.
But she was also in a number of other films. She was in Frankenstein General Hospital, which I have seen but do not have.
Sounds great.
A movie called L.A. Goddess. American Kickboxer 2 is another big one that she was part of. She was on a bunch of TV things like Knight Rider and Chips and Airwolf, stuff like that. So she was definitely, she was kind of like, you know, a minor celeb or a minor star.
So one of her titles that is on here on IMDb is 1993's Wild Cactus, which that was when I was in high school and I was working at a video store and I rented that. And it's really? Actually a pretty decent movie.
Okay.
I haven't seen it since 1993, but yeah.
I never saw that one. Well, as I said, she replaces herself midway through, or even midway through, with an actress called Jennifer Daly. Now, I don't know a whole lot about Jennifer Daly. There's not much out there. I can tell you that in 2000, she produced and appeared in a movie called The Giving Tree with Christina Applegate. And that's really about it. I think she was in a couple of other minor films, but other than that, I know nothing about Jennifer Daly other than I could tell when she was there and Kathy Shaw was not. I know, Moody, I think you said you couldn't tell most of the time.
Okay, so I saw the movie twice. In both times, I didn't think about it. Like, I wasn't like, I saw on the IMDb that there was two robo chicks. I thought that was like a stunt double or something, you know, or whatever. But watching the movie, I never once thought that. So it was weird. Like,
yeah, same here. Like I said, I was intentionally trying to figure out, like, I figured at one point in the movie, there would just be this point in time where you never saw her face.
Right.
And there really wasn't. Like, so it must have been like they must have just organized their shots to do all of her stuff really
and
early, her close-up stuff.
I wanted to see if perhaps that's what it was. Perhaps maybe this was her stunt double, because she really doesn't look like it, like, you know, her face. So if you're going to have a stunt double, that necessarily, you're not going to get somebody who's necessarily going to look like that. But then again, like I said, you put that stupid wig on there and it dominates the face so much, you could pretty much put anyone in there.
Yes.
You know? I wonder if like they had not had that wig in the beginning, and then maybe, well, I guess they would have had to, because she had it in the beginning the whole time. it just seems like something that you would think, like, oh God, what are we going to do? Oh, let's get this huge, like, crazy, really crap wig and just hide the girl underneath it.
I think they were just lucky that they already decided to use a crappy wig.
Oh, I know. And it's not quite as bad as the level of, say, you know, substituting a chiropractor for Bela Lugosi like Ed Wood had to do.
Yeah.
But that's what it reminded me of. I mean, I was able to pick up on it.
Oh, I'm sorry, though. Even in Plan 9, like, people go, oh, he's a foot taller or something like that. I didn't even notice that, you know? Like, had I been in, the 50s and I watched it or whatever, I would have seriously just assumed that was still Bela Lugosi, you know?
Yeah. I noticed it, but I wouldn't have guessed he was a foot taller. So to go on with all of the folks that are in the film, there is Burt Ward.
Woo!
He's the guy playing Harry Truman Hodgkins, who says his name many, many times. It's just so weird.
Taxidermist bomber.
Yes, yes. He, of course, is famous for being in the 1960s Batman TV show. And he actually, it's funny, I did some interesting research. He's an interesting fellow. He was a top flight athlete. People don't know that, and a martial artist. And in fact, he was not only friends with Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's a first official fight that he ever had filmed was fighting Burt Ward, which is pretty interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So he's actually been in a lot of different things. He actually recorded a song with Frank Zappa. It's just strange.
That's random.
I know.
Cool. That's cool.
He has a 3D animation and special effects company now that he uses to do production work for various people in Hollywood. And this was a really good thing, is that he's opened a dog rescue for Great Danes.
Aww.
Yeah. So Burt Ward's pretty cool, if you ask me.
He was my favorite part of this movie. I loved his character. There was a point where it was like they took the joke and they didn't really go anywhere with it.
Oh,
they were kind
God.
Of holding on to it for too long. But the whole, like, his character and the way he played it was, like, my favorite part of this by far.
I agree. And the funniest thing about that is, like, when I watched it, I literally thought Burt Ward was only going to be in it for, like, maybe 5 minutes or something.
Oh,
and
no.
He's in it for, like, the whole fucking movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he is great.
He is the terrorist. I mean, yes. Yeah.
the milquetoast terrorist. It's just so funny. So he was good. Yes, Dr. Von Cohen is Kip King. Wow, what a great performance. What a scene-chewing performance. I've never seen so much scenery chewed in my life. He was hysterical. Just so incredibly over the top. He's a guy that's been in the biz for a long time. Way back in the 50s, he was on Dragnet. He was in The Rifleman, Mr. Ed, My Favorite Martian. He was actually on the Batman TV show with Burt Ward, so they already had some kind of relation. He was in Barney Miller. He was in all kinds of stuff. And the two movies that really stood out for me that he was in was he was in the original Westworld back in 1973, and he was in a movie called Slumber Party 57 back in 1976 with one of my favorite movie crushes of all time, and that's Cheryl Rainbow Smith. And so he's definitely been around. And towards the end of his career, he did a lot of voice acting for cartoons and movies and such, which you can tell from his voice in this film.
I could see you could be good at that.
Yeah.
Right. And as a matter of fact, a number of the rest of the cast are definitely voice actors. So Phil Proctor, who plays Police Chief Morton, he was in stuff like All in the Family and the Dukes of Hazzard, Simon & Simon, but he also did a number of voice acting. Peter Johnson, who plays the leader of Satan's Onions, the ridiculous motorcycle gang who had their jackets screwed up instead of Satan's Minions. It's Satan for all of them. How ridiculous. He is a voice actor as well. And then there's another group of folks that just, this is like their one and only in a movie database credit. So the guy who played John Kent, the news guy, this Ransom Baker, this is his only credit. Same thing with the chick who plays Bambi Doe, the other a news anchor. This is her only one. And then one final thing is I did want to point out that Burt Ward's wife, Tracy Posner, plays in the movie as well. She plays Fiona. So that was kind of cool.
And see, the fact that there are so many, like, one-and-done kind of people has that, like, I mean, that kind of somebody's a friend of somebody, blah, 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 had no aspirations of acting. And that's the kind of movie you really would feel like there'd be a lot more trivia about. And this just doesn't have much out there.
Right, right. There's not a lot out there, which is, again, a reason why I would love to get my hands, I'd love to get a chance to interview Kathy Schauer.
Oh, my.
Although, Jonathan, I think you mentioned, you said you doubt that she'd want to talk about this film. I don't know.
If she left it for whatever reasons that she left it for, it might be a sore subject. I mean, there might have been something more than just it's a bad movie. Like, you know, so you got to be careful.
Well, she gave money. She was an executive producer. Exactly. So, I mean, she had a lot of skin in the game.
So, like, for her to leave, that means, like, it has to be... There's something there, you know.
And right. It's either some kind of professional issue, but then you never know. It could have been a physical thing. It could have been a family emergency. I mean, who knows? There's a story there that we're never going to know until we track her down. Yeah.
Because it could even be kind of what you alluded to. It could be the fact that she's like, I'm only going to be on set for like 4 days. Let's do all my stuff and my stunt double's taking over. Like, we don't know that wasn't planned from the very beginning.
Right,
right.
That's very smart.
Or it could just been she saw what was going on and said, okay, I'm going to go do another tip movie because this is terrible. Yeah. Peace out.
Not even Rhonda Shearer is going to play this one.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
I mean, so, I noticed that the tone changed. Midway through, like the beginning was a lot more fun. Like my favorite part is when she goes into the alley and rescues the girl and she's laughing at the guy's jokes. It's so funny. It's like she goes in there beating their ass and she goes over and she's just like ha 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 and like mimicking them almost, and I was like, what is happening? But it was such an awkward exchange that it was like so different from what you would expect that I loved it. It's just it had a lot of moments that were cool, but I don't know. Like, that was kind of my favorite whole, like, sequence.
Yeah,
it definitely loses something from the first half. I thought the first half was a lot of fun, and it's a shame because this could have been such a great wackadoodle movie if it had stayed similar to the first half. There's a scene there that is really, really telling to me. It's back when Robotchick has gone off to... Professor Von Kollen is back in his, you know, garage/laboratory, and suddenly he's looking for his notes, and we find out that there's a robo car, there's a robo chair, there's a robo can of oats. What the hell? And so I kept thinking, you know what's going on? This guy didn't just create RoboCop or RoboChick, rather. He had to start from somewhere else and work his way up. There's probably this whole slew of weird, wacky robo creatures that are out there.
Dogs, robo
creatures, robo squirrel.
I loved Robo Car. I loved the fact that she was in an episode of Knight Rider because I called that one Ghetto Kit. It's like beaten up, you know, and it's like one headlight's like flickering.
Can you imagine like, you know, that robo chick gets captured because she's so sweet and innocent she can be tricked, but she would send out a distress signal and so Von Kollen would send out all the robo creatures to rescue her, and robo chair is bumping into people and robo can of oats is showering people with oats. It's just people have so much fun with that.
Okay, can I say that, so Julie told her favorite sequence. My favorite, it's not a sequence. I have a very juvenile sense of humor, okay? So when people have those, like, repetitive jokes, like, it takes me a long time to, like, get, you know, to get sick of them. My favorite one is when Robocar goes away And then the doctor hails a cab and he's like, follow that car. Right. And the cab follows it without taking him. And every time you see RoboCar after that, that damn cab is following the car.
They're in a relationship.
That's funny.
I thought they were in the car relationship, like they were bonded.
Yeah. But it's like, actually, what a great taxi driver, right?
It's funny. One of my favorites is actually one of the most subtle little scenes. One of the wacky robo creatures is that robotic arm that just kind of sort of comes and goes whenever. I think he gets whacked by one time. Well, once when he's like, I gotta think, and it shoves a glass of water in him because it's thinking drink, and he's like, no, I'll fix you later, without saying the joke, which was great, but we all understood what was going on. I thought that was a wonderful moment. So that was cool. But yeah, we needed more of that kind of stuff.
And I can say that one thing that was kind of a missed opportunity was the book titles, like how they have these guidebooks, how to... Like, there's just a whole slew of them the whole time, but they are so, like, quick when they show them. And, like, I was watching this on YouTube, so if I rewind, then it's just going to buffer forever if I do that. So I couldn't even.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to see a lot of those jokes. Like, you know, they had, like, how to fly a helicopter. Like, they just happened to have all these how-to books everywhere.
Right. It was just one of the many jokes that they tended to sort of pound over and over and over. And that's the other thing is that, you know, wackiness was just buried under very, very bad jokes. There's just so many bad jokes, especially in the first half.
Well, I wrote a couple jokes down. First of all, the place is called Kaka News, you know, news station. So that from the very beginning should show you what's going on. And then it goes, one guy says, the news is called the news because it's supposed to have news in it. It's like, all right.
Okay.
And then his, and then the scientist, Dr. Ron Colin or whatever, he would say, was he a German Jewish one? Because at one point I should have created a slower poison, you know? And I was like, where did that come from? So there was a couple like really goofy jokes in it. Oh, my favorite scene period was the scene with Burt Ward on the phone telling the news stuff that he's going to bomb the place while there's like 20 cops behind him.
With Dunkin' Donuts boxes.
Right.
And half of them are fat as hell too.
And then he turns around to leave and he drops something. And it looks like the cop's gonna, you know, grab him to like arrest him. And he goes, "We protect and serve." You know?
Yeah.
So bad. Oh, it was great though. I love that.
So okay, so another one, because you guys don't go in like a chronology, like that's what I'm used to. But one of my other favorite little like running jokes was the Dobermans.
Oh right.
How the guy is trying to train them. And like at the one point, the one Doberman, like he gets a phone call and the one Doberman puts his paw on the phone, like to hang it up. But like the Dobermans are like adorable, sweet to everyone but their owner.
Right. Because the owner's a tool and, you know.
Yeah, clearly.
They're just tired. They're tired of his crap. Oh. They're like, can you rehome us?
The thing is, though, is that there are these weird tonal shifts in it as well, because when you think that you're dealing with a straight-up wacky comedy, there's also, you know, there's some violence in there, there's nudity in there, you know, one of the chicks just gets punched in the mouth, and it's like, what the fuck, man? It's like, what tone are you going for? So you kind of jerk back and forth. So that was one of the many problems I had with that. And then, you know, when it came time to actually doing things like, you know, some of the scenes, some of the action scenes, they looked awful. You know, like when she's doing her feats of strength, and he's just so, it was like comic book or cartoon, only worse. You know, when she's picking up the table, when she knocks out the one guy, you know, I mean, it just was not very convincing. Her little ray gun out of her finger.
That seemed like if you had these really well orchestrated fight scenes or whatever, it would feel so wrong, so off.
It was like when she grabbed the guy. Like when she grabbed the guy by the balls and lifted him up, and then they went and did the other shot, and like all of a sudden they go back and he's still falling from the air.
She lifted him way up, Julie.
Way up. So high up.
Yeah, that was goofy. What about the scene where they're I guess they're robbing a diner, and they like forget the money, and they're like they don't even know what the hell they're doing. I'm like, this is like the worst, most incompetent band of robbers I've ever seen.
They were dancing on the countertops and stuff. Like when we first like looked in at them, they're all dancing around. Like, why are they dancing? I don't understand what's happening.
And then the one guy is sitting there going. Whole time.
I don't know what. Go ahead, Rebecca. No, go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say, but we do find out at that point that Robo Chick has the ability to like use radio frequencies in her brain to call the cops. So we find out a little bit more that she's not just brawn.
And yeah. I guess part of it too is because when Kathy Schauer is doing that stuff, fun, and to me I can I'm okay with it. When it's the other person, like later on when they go back to that thing and they're fighting the rioters, and she's just kind of nonchalantly just kind of tossing them, and they're like not even bothering to put up a fight, I don't know, it just didn't seem funny to me. It didn't seem interesting to me. It was just like poorly done. So I guess right. It kind of depended on who was doing it at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know that poor Jennifer Daly had a whole lot of experience for that. So I think they just kind of tossed her in there and said, do your best. You know?
Well, yeah. And I think at toward the end, it just felt like the ending, like, or toward the end, it just kind of got, it did get flat, like you had said earlier, you know, like it wasn't as funny. There's a lot of comedies that in the very beginning, and I'll use one of my favorite comedies of all time is a movie called Orange County. And the first, like, half of that movie is hilarious, and then after that it gets kind of slow and kind of boring. And I think that's what happens a lot of times, is if you start off a comedy really funny and you know, or whatever, really over the top, you know, you got to keep that momentum going. And that's what this problem had, you know, this had a problem with. It just it was funny at first and then kind of fell flat, you know?
Yeah, and they tried to do that shift of like that it became more like a robo, like a cop kind of thing, you know, like she was just beating people up. And there wasn't any of that comedy still sprinkled in. I mean, there was the occasional joke, but that was pretty much gone in the last third.
It almost felt like they said very, that. I was going to say, it almost felt almost like a cartoon originally when it starts, but then it loses that feeling as it goes along. Like, you know, the part where she's picking up the table and there's bombs on there and he's like, I don't know if these things are, or not, so I'm just here and hold my ears. It's like, dude, if that's a bomb, you're gonna die. It doesn't matter if you're holding your ears 10 feet away or not. Come on,
your ears.
Right. I mean, I could see Bugs Bunny saying something like that, you know, it's just ridiculous. But that sort of stuff goes away after the second half, and it's just not as fun, it's not as interesting, and it just kind of makes the second half a lot more lifeless and, frankly, much harder to get through. I got through the first half of the film fairly simply.
I think they were starting to take themselves too seriously. It kind of felt like they're trying to make it. Like, you don't want to make that movie where it's already at go in a serious direction, because no one that you can have it be campy and have heart. And if you try to make too much out of it, people are just going to be like, well, no, we're not on board for this.
Right, and this could be in a situation where there was just simply, I mean, you've already got your star and executive producer who's bailed on you, and you've got two directors, you know, did they have conflict? Was one trying to do things one way and another trying to do another way? Did one take over for the other later? You know, did one have more influence at the beginning and not towards the end?
Here's a possibility as well. Then this is a good time saver. Did Ed do all, like, direct all the stuff with some more dialogue and just like more close-ups? And did the other guy get set up with the B squad? And was he the one who was doing all of the like more like stunt stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea. Like, that's a great thought.
Right, and the thing is that Ed Hansen had a lot more experience behind the camera than Jeff Mandel did. So, you know, other than Elves, he didn't really do a whole lot of directing. So it may very well be that it started off with that, and then, you know, it transitioned into Jeff later on. But again, that's the sort of thing that we're never going to know unless Jonathan, while he's out in Hollywood, goes up and digs up some of these folks so we can interview them and talk to them about this film.
Wait, dig them up? They're not dead, are they? Because I'm not digging anybody up.
Unfortunately,
Kathy Shower, I want to talk to you.
If I can get Kathy Shower on the Indie Film Cafe Spotlight, I will.
Yay!
If I can.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kip King has passed away. Which is a shame, but I think most of the other people. Oh, and Ed Hansen is also dead, but most of the other people are still alive now. Whether they're going to want to talk about this movie is a whole other creature. I certainly hope so, because you know, even if you're a professional and you've done all this stuff, come on, everybody makes a bad film. Everybody, you know, just whether you want to acknowledge it or not, it's okay. Just talk
people
about
people get their
it, you know?
Start that way though. There's so many people that it's always baffled me. It's baffled me to no end where people don't talk about like their roots, where they started. I don't get it, because it's kind of like, okay, you're not a fan of it, you're not proud of it or whatever, but still tell us. Like, people need to know. People that want to be inspired by you and find out how you got started and what you did. There's always a story to tell that we want to hear. Like, we're talking about this one, and we want to know. Like, we actually legit want to know. So it's kind of like, it's always been weird to me when people just straight up are like, I don't want to talk about
it. I totally get it, because nobody walks out making Citizen Kane right off the bat. You have to learn. You have to make mistakes, because that's how you learn how to make things. And that goes with everything in life. And there's no way you're going to make a perfect film right off the bat. So you have to do it in steps. Some people, okay, more steps than others. But, you know, it's funny, because all of these movies, all of these steps have something to them that's of interest to someone, you know, like this.
So if anyone is listening to mine and Jonathan's Indie Cafe Spotlight we did yesterday, and this one back to back, we have not compared notes. We had this exact conversation.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
I didn't know that.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah,
I didn't either.
It was a really good interview, you know, talk, but like, we talked about the indie scene and all of this stuff. So, but it's really great that, you know, because this is exactly the stuff that indie film aficionados, or whatever you want to call us, you know, enthusiasts love, you know.
Sure.
We love digging deep into, you know, figuring out like who these people are and meeting these people, and that's what, and you know, and Julie, you're a big part of Days of the Dead, you know, and everything. So and that's a big horror convention, so like, this is, you know, like that's a big part of. And you guys should get Kathy Showers for your
I swear, I'm gonna ask Bill. I'll be like, hey Bill, and he's gonna go, what? Who are you talking about? I'm like, well, you see, like, well, we have the screenings for indie films, and so it's like, well, what if we had just like almost like the petting zoo, but not actually, you know, it's like this little area that's specifically for these people that are part of these sought out gems, we'll call them. And it's, you know, we just want to see them and ask them any questions about these films. It's just like these obscure room, like our box of treasures room.
Well,
like,
and you just do have the House of Indie Horror, right? That whole track, which exactly. I'll tell Bill this, like, and I know most of my friends, and we aren't like rich, but that's where we spend all of our time and money at Days of the Dead, is basically hanging out with our friends and colleagues.
And it makes
that's
sense,
where I would be.
It makes sense, because
the shower table.
Your mainstream movies are going to get releases, you know, Blu-rays and 4Ks and all that, where they're going to have commentary. They're going to have all kinds of stuff. Nobody's doing the commentary for Robo Chick. It's not going to get released on Blu-ray.
Sad. We need a Robo Chick commentary.
Exactly. So, and that's one of the reasons why I picked this movie, is because it's fairly obscure. Most people haven't heard about this film. You know,
And this is a movie.
A group of people. If you get a group of people in a room to watch it, though, and you have Kathy Showers there, it's a whole other ballgame.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's think about it. Let's think outside the box. What if, like, Mystery Science Theater 3000 or Riff Tracks or something had, like, done this movie? Then it would be in a completely different, like, level. It just doesn't have, like, that sort of, that hook.
Hopefully we'll get to be as big as them someday, and people will go through our back catalog and say, oh, these guys did Robo Chick. They're awesome.
When that's what we kind of started to do this podcast for, is one of our taglines is we do the movies that Riff Tracks doesn't want to do. And that to us is like, that's more fun to find, like, more obscure. And Paul is really good with that. I tend to go for more of the stuff that I enjoy or that are more popular, but he does, like, more obscure shit that you're never going to see anywhere.
Oh, ladies, I wish you had been there for Barn of the Blood Llama. That's all I'm saying.
What? I need to see this collection. I think Rebecca and I both need, like, a listing of everything that you own, because I need to know about that one for sure.
Oh yeah, no, I have thousands upon thousands. It's been my big, you know, obsession for the last 30 years. You know, what can I say? So yeah, I'm in the midst of trying to get it all together so I can figure out what exactly I've got. And the good thing is I'm getting a lot more digital versions now, which is nice, because then I can Dropbox them, or I can, you know, send up links so that I can share it with other people. Because before, it was just a lonely DVD or a lonely VHS, and I would have to have somebody there with me. And if you weren't there, I couldn't really share it with everybody. So now I can do that, plus Zoom, we can actually talk about it, which is a great situation. I'm really thankful for that, and I'm glad you guys decided to come on the show through Zoom and, you know, get to talk about this weird, obscure stinker.
Right. This is one of those shows that, Paul and I were wondering this before, how we were going to get people to come on the show with me being, because, like, when I first told Paul I was moving to LA, Paul was like, well, what's going to happen with Indie Film Cafe? You know, right? That was his first question. His first question was, oh, why are you leaving me? It's why, you know, why is Indie Film Cafe going away? What happened with it? But no. I said, well, we'll still do it. We'll just do it from, you know, and my original plan was to just kind of do it separately. But now it almost seems like, you know, with everything, we can do a lot more stuff together, you know, now because of Zoom. So
yeah, silver linings in the black cloud that is COVID-19. It's forced us to do different things. And that's just it. You have to adapt in order to keep going. And that's what we've done.
I think it's making everybody more creative and more resourceful and more MacGyver. Like, we're all mini MacGyvers, just
at least people in our echelon, our realm.
Right. Yeah.
Sure. But exactly. It's allowing me to take more obscure films. As long as I got a digital copy, I can share it with folks and we can get together and talk about it. And you know, and I get to do my favorite part, which is doing all the research and finding out as much as I can and finding all the fun little nuggets of information that people didn't know about. Because that's always the fun for me, the Easter eggs.
So I think for sure, because, you know, I'm able to do, like, more than two people, I think Paul and I are going to be doing a lot more of his ones, you know, through Zoom together. So that'll be a lot of fun. And we're definitely going to, like, have more people back, you know, when we get a chance. So especially with you guys, we would love to have you guys more back, because I know – Rebecca, you just worked on Forgotten Horror Classics with him, so you know, and I'm sure he can find more of those for you you to watch at some point.
Oh yeah, and you know, I've got Lenore with me, and so she's going to be with me for a couple more months, and then she's going to leave and go back to North Carolina, and then, you know, after that, I'm going to be looking for a new co-host. So just throwing that out there.
Rebecca would be amazing for sure. I think that she would be absolutely huge.
I am always up for being on someone else's show, because it means that all I have to do is watch a movie and I don't have to edit when I get done.
Exactly.
And that's great. That's great. It's just, you know, it does take some time. So not everybody even has the time to just say, hey, I can watch a movie and talk about it.
Yeah.
So as long as you'd be able to do that once a month, you know, we could do it.
Yeah,
I want to see more of Rebecca. Like, I honestly like Rebecca. I think you're so good at hosting things, and you have such a like a very like strong way of leading and being somebody that people will listen to, and you can go and talk about things at extent. And I think that you'd be a really amazing co-host on a lot of things. So I think that I like seeing you talk, and like I like seeing you host and do that kind of thing for sure.
And she's had to be on like a million Zoom calls with me lately.
So. I'm like, Rebecca, please lead the conversation. I don't know where I'm at. Oh, I'm in San Francisco.
Well, steering it back to the film for just a moment. What about, I guess we kind of touched a little bit about the acting, but what did you think overall about the performances?
I mean, overall, I thought the performances were okay. I mean, I don't think there was anybody that was terrible, you know, like so bad it was, you know, like cringeworthy or anything, but it was, they were all goofy in their own sort of way.
They were all like appropriately bad.
Right.
That makes sense. Like, you know, like, yeah. I think some of them probably could have been better actors. Like Dr. Von Kolen, you can tell that guy can act, but he was like instructed to be like over the top, you know, James right. Bond, mad scientist villain kind of thing, you know. And Burt Ward was, I mean, he was so wormy and just like, you know, such a diminutive little
dipshit.
But he did such a good job of it.
Yeah.
Right, right. If there's anything cringeworthy in this, it's not from the acting. It's really from the writing and the bad jokes. I mean, they kind of went for the shotgun effect, and you know, just throwing stuff against the wall and hoping some of it sticks. Unfortunately, most of them just do not. They just kind of fall flat. And one of the worst things that you can do out there is to make an unfunny comedy. But like I said, the first half I was okay with. It just really ground to a halt after the second half, and I have to wonder if that has to do with, I mean, I know it has to do with Kathy Schauer leaving and that chemistry that she had with Von Kolen going away.
Let's face it too, we have not even mentioned the whole storyline of the governor of police or whatever. The baddie who has like his harem of like slave girls and stuff. I mean, we haven't even like mentioned them because
I just didn't even care.
Yeah. It was so like blah blah blah. Let's get back to the scientist and
exactly.
I think the best part of that was like the scene where they're all in the bed and there's just the one naked girl. And then the other dude's like under the covers and he just comes like out of it. Like, I think that was the most interesting part of that for me, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I just didn't care about the other tertiary stuff. It just, you know, they spent too much time on that. They had a golden opportunity to do all the fun stuff with Kathy Schauer and the doctor. You know, this movie's Robo Chick. Show us more Robo Chick. Show us some of those crazy, wacky, you know, early inventions that the doctor made, because that's a lot of fun too. You know,
more, I would love those.
Exactly. Robo Oats. I want Robo Chair. I love Robo Chair. He's so ridiculous.
But even when, like they spent too much time on that stuff. And like, they could have even made like her infiltration, like of the bad guys. They could have made it interesting, but instead it was kind of like, okay, Robo Chick walks in. She boom, 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 gets the case and leaves. Because even Robo Chick is like, this is boring.
Right.
You're bored, Robo Chick.
Yeah.
That's funny. But yeah. So it's kind of a shame. I almost want to call it kind of a missed opportunity. I wonder if a better writer would have just made this a better film. I mean, I guess it would have. But it leads me to, and yet the other thing I always bring up with Jonathan, how awesome would it be to remake this movie? I would love to remake Robo Chick. You know, I say this every time.
Julianne Prescott is Robo Chick.
Yes, we can do this. We just have to go with the wacky Robo critters and just push that angle. Yeah. It could be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I think so too. They should have pushed that more.
Well, I think that there would be a perfect remake, because it's at least like an indie perfect remake. You know, like, sure. I don't see Hollywood ever remaking this.
Oh, no. They don't make anything fun.
No. But
this would be a perfect thing for like a $10,000 to $20,000 movie or something, you know, where you just kind of goof around and have fun.
Yeah, well, you got to make the Robo Critters, so maybe a few more bucks than that. But I tell you that
middle schoolers can make that stuff.
Burt Ward is still around. We could get Burt Ward for this. You could probably get Burt Ward on board with this.
maybe.
You know, and recently, and I forgot
funding for it.
I forgot to mention this. He actually just got his Hollywood Boulevard star in January.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, it was funny because you know we were there and we missed it. We could have walked right past him and not even known.
Yeah, probably did.
But so yeah, I would love to show this to Jude Larry Butler and say, dude, you could do this doc. You could do the doctor.
Yeah,
he would be a great Dr. Von Kolin.
G. Larry Butler would be a perfect Von Kolin. I agree. What were you going to say, Rebecca?
I was going to say, speaking of Burt Ward, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is when they have, like, the bikers have taken him hostage because they're using him for leverage. He's all tied up at the bar, and they're getting him drunk, and he's got the ropes around him, but he's still picking up his beer and talking about, you know, like, his whole life or whatever, and he's like, I never liked my name, and one of the bikers goes, so you never really loved yourself.
Oh my god, that was deep.
It's so ridiculous.
I loved it.
My name is Harry Truman Hodgkins. I must have said that 15 times. Oh yes. My goodness.
And he was proud of that name. He was proud of it.
No, he wasn't. He never likes it. Okay.
Oh no,
he never lived up to it.
No, that's what I'm saying. He wanted to live up to it. Right. That's why he was doing all this stuff. But he, you know, he wanted to live up to the name. So obviously did like it enough where he, you know, wanted to live up to it. That's what I got out of it.
Feel worthy.
Well, one of the things I will point out as far as performances goes, I didn't think the guy who played John Kent was and I think it's probably no surprise why he only has the one single credit.
Yeah. But he was kind of like that generic, decent-looking dude. Character.
Right.
I mean, he didn't need to be good. He just needed to be like a stand-in.
I guess he just, you know, the delivery of his lines just did not really convince me. They weren't particularly polished, and he just was more of an irritant, especially when he starts yelling at RoboChick. I'm like, dude, shut up and go away. We don't even need you in this movie.
Yeah,
we don't need you.
He gets all mad at her because she's a robot. Like, well, she can't help it.
Right.
That was ridiculous.
Do?
That was ridiculous. Like, yeah, I mean, she was a robot. Yeah. And then he, like, when he finds out, he gets all freaking pissed off. And I'm like, okay, like, what does that, is he mad because he can't fuck a robot? Is that, like, literally the only reason he's mad? Like, that was what the only thought in my head. What?
I don't understand why he couldn't.
Right, yeah. Exactly. You never know, man.
You can at least hump her, you know, if she's not answering correct.
Hey, she might be like a toaster and have several slots.
You know,
you have to think that at that point in time, Dr. Von Kolin has thought all of this through.
Right. You know, and you know how the some toasters you can make wider to put a bagel in? You know, the same kind of thing.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I'm sorry. You know, if there's a bad, you know, joke to make, I'm going to jump on it.
Well,
he was hitting on her all the time. So for him to be that preoccupied, he had to have thought about it.
Because, you know, originally, you know, when he's putting her hair on and, you know, you see her naked and everything and you're like, okay, we can see where this is going. It really doesn't go that way. He kind of gets a little... you know, shy about it. I mean, he makes,
like schoolboyish.
Yeah, he puts like, clothes on her.
You've been staring at those tits for like months on the day.
Right, as soon as she comes to life, it seems so, and that's a good thing. That's character development, you know, because he could have just oogled her, he could have just had her naked, but he treats her nicely.
They became walking tits.
But, you know, like at one point where, you know, he's going to make coffee and then she's like, oh, no, I'll make it for him. He's like, no, you shouldn't do that. But she wants to, so she can learn. Of course, she makes a shitty ass to get coffee because she has no idea what she's doing. But stop her from doing something that would be considered demeaning because, you know, just because he's a woman, he doesn't have to make coffee for him. He dresses her and everything.
I don't want to get, like, too deep, okay, guys? on Robo-Chick. But there's a very strong, like, feminist tone to this because the women who could normally be, like, put off by her are not. Like, Bambi, you know, she's a little mad at first, but then, like, Robo-Chick steps in and explains, well, no, you need him to tell everybody all the bad news because they need you to comfort them at the end of the day. You know, and then, like, at the diner, he's, you know, after he's pissed off and he, you know, John Kent wants all the footage or whatever. Then that one girl comes up and is like, who's that? And he's like, oh, she's a robot. She's like, I don't care who she is. God bless Robo-Chick, you know?
Right. Like,
right. You know, and she frees the harem chicks.
Right.
Yeah, so it's not even just like a strong character thing. There's like this whole like female solidarity thing.
Right. That's what I'm saying. The time is ripe for a Robo-Chick reboot. We can do this.
Let's do it. We're going to do this. All
right. Yay!
I got $5 I'll put into the pot. It'd
be a lot of fun. And I bet you dollars to donuts, if we asked Kathy Schauer, she would come back and play the role of the TV news anchor. I could see her doing that.
Yes.
That would be great.
One of them. There'd be at least one of them that would want to, for sure.
Yeah. All right. It's, you know, we it's about that time to start giving our rating. So, Paul, why don't you tell everybody about our rating system?
Okay. So, for those of you, as a refresher, who have been listening to our show, and for the benefit of you, those who have not, we have a stinkometer, which is rated from 1 to 10, by which I lower the number, the less stink. So, if you decide that it's a pretty good movie, you give it a 1. If you think that there's a little bit of a medium amount of stink, you give it a 5. And if you think that it's a really crappy, stinky, awful, terrible, horrible, ridiculous movie, you go ahead and you give it a 10. And so we end up generating a score based on 3 scores. And then at the end of the season, we pop and we figure out which is the stinkiest movie of the season. So here we go.
You can also do 0.5 if you want.
Yeah, that's true. If you're feeling subtle, you could go ahead. So, since we have guests this time, I thought we'd let one of the ladies go ahead and give your scores first. So,
whichever one you guys
want to
go.
Go ahead, Julie.
I would say that I would give it like a 7. Because I really enjoyed actually watching it, and because of some of the stuff that you guys brought up, where the interaction with the characters, the enjoyability, and I do that mainly for the first half, like we've been talking about, because I really had fun. It took me back. I love this kind of movie. It's what I grew up on, and it's what, you know, to an extent that I like to do myself. I like to do really fun, campy, like just crazy, off the wall things. So I had a lot of respect for what I was watching, but it fell flat towards the end and it lost me, and I didn't like where it was going. So, I'm going to say a 7.
Okay. That's fair enough.
Right. What about you, Rebecca?
I am going to go right in the middle at a 5 because this had a lot of potential. And here's the thing too, when you say that something stinks or not, like, that means different things to different people. Like, I like bad movies. But either way, whether 1 is good or bad, 10 is good or bad, I'm still just right in the middle because I felt like it had so much potential. And segue. I actually watched the whole movie, but the last maybe half of it or third of it, I got involved in some stuff, some business for a movie that Julie and I are working on. And so I really wasn't like paying attention to the movie that much. And I thought, God, it's kind of flat. So I actually went back and watched the second half again the next day. And I was like, no, it still just didn't hold my attention. Like, had it held my attention, I would have been like, I'm putting my phone on airplane mode and I'm going to watch it. So there is a disappointment factor there. Again, the fact that there's just really nothing out there about the making of this movie, because that oftentimes will elevate a movie for me. Just to know, just to be able to listen to a commentary track.
Right.
And there be anything interesting, like people being like, oh my God, do you remember we had like chili dogs that day? You know, like anything that humanizes it, anything that brings it back to this really was just people making this movie. You get the impression that at some point in time, somebody thought this was going to be bigger than it was. So I'm going right in the middle. Bye.
Okay. Very interesting. Well, I'm going to jump in here and give my score. This was a tale of two movies for me. You know, the stuff with Kathy Schauer with Kip King, you know, even though it was ridiculous and silly and over the top, I quite enjoyed it. And I wish to God that so much more of the movie had captured that. It would have just been a whole different experience. That I was willing to give as low a score as, say, a 5 or 5.5. The other half of the film, the part without Kathy Schauer and without too much of the doctor, just ground on and on, and it was just painful and so much of a chore for me to get through. And that was just awful. All the bad jokes and all the other stuff that just didn't work. To me, that was a 9. You know, when I'm gritting my teeth to have to get through this, I'm going to give it a much higher score. So when I combine the two, I'm probably going to go ahead and give this movie an 8.
All right.
So there you go.
And even though my score won't count for this one, because we're going to let the two guests, you know, scores, you know, and Paul's, since this is Paul's show episode. But I will still say I'm going to give it a 6.5, you know. I think it's not a great movie at all, like not by any stretch of the imagination. It's not terrible. Like, it's not, you know, it's like not a 9 or a 10 no. worthy, but it's definitely, you know, it's sort of, I mean, if it were as funny as it was in the beginning, and the second half weren't boring and everything as much as it was, because like it was tough to watch it twice. I would say I would say, like, if it were like that the whole time through, it would have been definitely a lower number and everything. But since it wasn't, it's kind of a mediocre movie, honestly, and like the kind of the. Is, you know, it's still something I'd recommend people watch, you know, if they've never seen it, you know, and they want to check Cyber Chick/Robo Chick out. Though I don't know why it was ever called Cyber Chick.
She's wearing a name tag the entire time that says Robo Chick.
Yeah.
Why change that?
Yeah.
Unless it was a RoboCop thing. Maybe they wanted to.
Maybe they got in trouble with the Robo Chick thing.
Yeah. There was a third title of it as well. It's like Thunder something or other. I forget. It's so ridiculous. I know. I keep wanting to say Thunder Thighs, and it's a terrible thing.
I was going
to say Thunder Tits. Rebecca almost spit out her drink there when you said that.
I know. But, you know, just because I know, Moody, you thought I was going to give this a 10. Here's the thing, though. I mean, we have seen 10s, and some of the elements that we've talked about in some of the other bad films is, okay, A, we're able to actually see it. You know, there's a lot of movies we watch where we can't even see what the hell's going on. You know, we could hear it. You know, and we have movies on the show where we can't hear a damn thing or make out what's going on. You could do that in this film. You know, see, we could understand what was going on. You know, you take any of the some of the really bad films that we've done, Neil Breen, we have no clue what the hell's going on. This, you know, as simplistic as it was, you could follow it from A to B to C, and it made some kind of sense, but much better than some of the crappier films that we've got. So that's why I didn't really give it a higher score, although it was still pretty darn stinky.
I'm with Julie. Actually, I think you guys need to compile your list of all of your, like, 9s to 10s that you've done?
Oh, we have that. We have a stinkometer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, send that because I'd like to just see some of those or see what I think. Like,
if please go to our website. You will see them.
I will send you a link to the website and you can check out this. Both of you can check out the stinkometer and see what we have. I know Paul is working on categorizing or cataloging his movies and writing down what he has, what he doesn't have, and everything. And when he gets like a full list, I'm sure he'll put that somewhere, maybe on the website or something.
And, so people and believe me, I would love to do a show of nothing but tens, and I could do it. I could absolutely do it. Jonathan knows.
I know, but he likes
the top
to save them.
Tens.
Well, I mean, there's been
that'll be fun.
So far, there's only been a couple. Like all around tens. One was two of them were from Neil Breen.
Do you remember Neil Breen movies?
You know, so
okay,
yeah.
Okay, I would never give. Okay, anybody who can go to Goodwill and get like bad laptops and like spray paint a Dish Network disc, put it in the back of their car. I'm never giving that a 10.
Oh my goodness.
And then the other one was we just did this year. We got our first 30 early, which was Zombie Cop, done by J.R. Bookwalter. That's a really rough movie.
I have not watched that one, but I do love J.R.
J.R. Bookwalter also did Robot Ninja, which starred Burt Ward.
Right.
That was what I was originally thinking of, but I would have had to pay for Robot Ninja.
I have my signed Robot Ninja poster over my fireplace.
It's a better movie.
Yeah. Well, and it's all remastered, and he even made a documentary that's on Prime for free. I mean, I have the Blu-ray, and it's on there. But I mean, he said he spent more time remastering.
Stick around because next year we're planning on doing Robo Vampire next season.
And I'm sure we'll have another J.R. Bookwalter movie because we've had one almost every season, so already. So, I mean.
But yeah, definitely go to our website. We have all kinds of movies, and you know we have a nice range too. They're not all horrible, terrible films. We have actually some good ones. We've had some movies that are just plain fun and wacky that they're not necessarily great films, but they're so much fun to enjoy. You know, you watch Rat Think of Boo Boo, and it's just such a hysterical movie. That's like the lowest scoring movie we've got. I think it's like a 2.5. You know, and there's a couple other ones that Moody brought that have scored low as well because they're just fun. Yeah. You know.
Well, I think that about wraps it up. But I do want to have you guys promote the Indiegogo you guys got going on.
There you go.
Come on, we got to whore ourselves out.
Yes,
Julie and I are involved in a movie called The True Tale of Old Splitfoot versus the Lesbian Warrior Nuns of the Great White North. And we are running an Indiegogo right now. She and I play nuns who are posing as strippers at a strip club called the Beaver Dam in Canada.
As you do.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to like save the freaking world. Okay. So we have like the coolest perks there. I mean, everything from condoms and holy water lube.
I need some holy water lube.
Yeah. You can get like a 5-pack, you know. Hot sauce, syrup, because of course there is also maple syrup bootlegging in the film. Down to my character has a dildo that she leaves lying around the club. And so you can even have that screen used prop.
Nice.
So igg.me/splitfoot or find us on Facebook. We do have a group for.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
If you need like somebody to walk around like an idiot in a cow costume, I'm available.
We may. We just may. You never know.
What else are you guys up to? Like, I guess, Rebecca, tell us what else you're up to, and then I'll get to Julie.
Okay, well, I'll just make it very quick because, well, actually, the main things that I'm focusing on all involve Julie. So the Embalmers is...
We're kind of like together.
I know. That is my film. I know. Actually, yeah. So The Embalmers is the movie that I am writing, directing, producing. Julie is in that movie as well. We just finished our Indiegogo on that. We're going to be filming in the fall. Again, you can find that on Facebook, Backwoods Bubba, that I co-wrote and I'm in, and Julie is in as well. we are going to start the Indiegogo for that in July 1st. And we just revealed action figures.
Nice.
Yes. Okay, Julie, did you not think, like, I'm an action figure. I think I've made it somehow.
I think I can die now. I'm like, I'm so happy.
I know.
I'm happy.
Well, do you have tarot cards? Because I was going to say, Embalmers has tarot cards.
I finally got a tarot card. I am week 3, so I think next week is when mine is released.
Yay.
So again,
I feel like I've made it somehow.
Right, you've got an action figure and a baseball card, so there you go.
And so when she said we have a film relationship, we're also in Brad Twigg's Shriek Show together. So we were late ads, and so they wrote a cold open for us, and we are lesbian lovers on an ill-fated camping trip.
Yay.
There you go.
We love Brad Twigg.
Ill-fated.
Indie Film Cafe loves Brad Twigg.
Awesome.
I don't suppose that zombie squirrel from MILFs vs. Zombies showed up in a cameo, did he?
Well, we haven't filmed yet, so...
God, I hope so. I keep telling him Zombie Squirrel needs his own film.
He could kind of be like the, what is it, from, from Caddyshack. The gopher.
The gopher.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's so perfect.
Exactly. Munching his way through everybody, as you should.
Yeah, well, I just want to say, and Julie, did you have a couple more projects that you wanted to promote?
I just want to promote, one of them is SoCal Cinema and their on-demand service, which is like $4.99. And all of the films on there it goes back into what we did, like back into paying for all of our productions and giving back. And it promotes a lot of really amazing people that are in the scene. And it's one of my favorite teams to work with. And all of the films kind of come out through there. So you can see a lot of my work, including The Last Roommate, which I'm really proud of, which stars also Jen Nangle, who's an amazing, amazing actress. And so you can go on there and see a couple things that I've worked on. And when they come out, they go there, and it's usually really like a quick kind of turnaround to get back on there and give back. Nice. So I'd like to promote that. And it's something that people can watch at home. And it's, again, it's like, you know, like almost $5 a month, but that's with Starbucks. So, and we're all at home when we want to be entertained anyway, and they have a lot of content in there, and it's all indie horror people that are just super cool folks that are having their content on there. And then also the next few projects that I'm working on that I have dates for that I'm really excited about would be Oh My Darling, which Rebecca knows about Oh My Darling.
I'm producing.
Exactly.
We sound like we're Siamese twins all of a sudden.
I think we're like melded, and we become like the Hellraiser, like the two things.
Double trouble.
Melded together. And then the next one is Bloody Summer Camp, and I'm actually filming that on my birthday weekend. So I'm really excited to be working with them and moving forward. I play a naughty nurse that can't tell you too much more than that, but she's naughty. But back to naughty nurses, death care is moving forward. Appetite for Sin is a vampire film. I've been in touch with them. And then Clown Motel 2 is going to happen. So there's a lot of films that are, I just try to reach out and see where everybody's at on these crazy times. So those are some that I feel really strongly about that are, you know, getting plans in place, and I'd like to give them respect. And there's a bunch like Teacher Shortage and High Fear and other really amazing films that are working towards getting through these new times where they are doing the festivals, but it's online. So hopefully those will all be accessible as soon as possible for everybody to kind of find out how you can see them with your own two eyes.
Exactly. All right, that sounds great.
Or one eye, if you only have one eye, like my dog.
What about you, Jonathan? Do you have anything you want to talk about?
Well, no, but I just want to mention that Julie and I we're going to be doing hopefully two projects together next year, Supernatural Yay! Assassins and The Sacrificed. So hopefully, and Rebecca, I'm sure you'll be on board for some of the projects coming up too.
Probably.
You know, if I'm working with Julie, I'm most likely going to be working with you, right? Is that the...
I think that's the way it
Here's
goes.
Here's my plan.
There you go. You should write it into your contract.
Yeah.
We got to be together.
So that's perfect. So we love you guys here.
Thank you.
And definitely. We can't wait. We've got a lot of stuff going on for Indie Film Cafe. So if you guys want to find out more information, check out indiefilmcafe.net. Which was a new website, but then our other website that Paul runs is indiefilmcafe.reviews, where we have our Stinkometer. So check that out, and I think we also have a Patreon. So if you guys want to check out Patreon,
yes, and that's one of the things I wanted to do. Is I mean, especially if we can zoom some of these episodes, we can do some Patreon only episodes that aren't going to show up on the regular channels that we can put out there for more indie film.
They could watch all of our hijinks early, probably.
There you go.
Right. Yeah, definitely. So
that's definitely an avenue we want to, you know, check out.
Well, that calls for bikini hot tubs, so.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, if you guys also, like I said, well, we got an interview with Rebecca coming up on Indie Film Cafe Spotlight, so check that out. I'm sure Julie will get you on one of the many podcasts that we do here, so to talk more stuff. I know we did a What the Fuck Friday with you and an Indie Film Cafe Spotlight, so that was fun. Right.
Did we do Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things?
Yes, we did.
Oh, yes, that's right. Watched. I watched that. Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, so fun. There you go. So we'll definitely have everybody back on more stuff. And I'm still looking at that Chucky doll, wondering if it's going to come after us right now.
Come to life. He just hangs out back
there. He's a ginger.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. He's happy.
Well,
I want to thank both you ladies for coming on to the show. It was a delight having you. You're both fantastic. And I definitely want to do this more. Mr. Moody, thank you for pulling all this together. This was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And I think I have to say that we seem to have had a pretty good time checking out Robo Chick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Unless anybody has anything else to say, I guess we're going to wrap up and join us next time for another interesting episode of Indie Film Cafe.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.